What you are about to hear is the story of a connection that was made between a television series and a viewer's life. Our television set sits in the corner of our living room, befriending us, educating us, inspiring us, making us laugh or cry or tear our hair out in frustration. It is a far more constant companion than most of the friends we will ever make, or even our family. The You and Who books are the story of that companionship, that connection, as told by the people who watch the programmes that make us come alive, chiefly, of course, Doctor Who. This podcast will relate some of those stories. You're listening to You and Who Talking, and I'm J.R. Southall, the creator and chief editor of the series.
Hi, I'm Rob.
And I'm JR.
And you're listening to You and Who Talking. And this week, well, before we get into this week, I want to throw out an invitation to people who have been listening to these episodes to get involved by sending us in your takes, your recordings, your stories for these episodes. Whether you've written for You and Who before or not, doesn't matter. Get writing about, what do you say, JR, about 1,000 words, 1,200 words would be normal for these?
Yeah, it doesn't really matter. As people will have noticed, we've been putting out readings that have been 5 minutes long, that have been 15 minutes long. You know, what I always said to the authors when we were doing the books is, we recommend that it's somewhere between 1,000 and 2,000 words, but really, whatever length you're comfortable with telling your story in is the length that your story should be. So if it's a really long one, we don't mind. And if it's a really short one, we don't mind. You know, suppose we get half a dozen 3 minute ones, we may have episodes in the future where there are three readings on rather than one or two.
Exactly so. Don't be shy. We've got a pretty full roster for the weeks ahead, but we're always interested in adding more. So please get in touch. You know how to find us.
Yeah, absolutely right. This is such a lovely podcast. Even though we do say so ourselves. This
exactly.
is such a lovely podcast. We just want more and more and more of it so we can keep it going.
Exactly. And this week we have Peter Cavanagh with a very funny essay. I laughed when I heard this one.
Yes.
How did you feel when you first heard this? Well, you would have first read it, I guess.
Well, when I first read it, it came in at the time we were doing Contact Has Been Made. And it didn't really fit the format of that book, because Contact Has Been Made was, a two-volume set in the end because it was so big, where we went through every Doctor Who story and found somebody's story that we could attach to those television stories and sort of tell the history of the series through the way people watched it. Peter Cavanagh, who I'd got to know and I realised he could write and I knew how funny he was, he came in very late in that process and he said, what's left? And I said, well, actually, it's more or less finished, but I'd like you to write something anyway and we'll just see what we can do with it. So he came up with this essay and it was such a brilliant essay. And I thought, there's nothing we can attach that to because, you know, all the elements of the book are really kind of already filled in. But I just thought it needs to go in there somewhere anyway. And we were in volume two, Chris Bryant, who edited it, and I were throwing in some odd essays between the sections so that there'd be like a sort of an essay that wasn't to do with the theme of the book in between each of the chapters, as it were. So we threw it in as one of those. So it's in there as an odd essay out almost, but it was such a good essay. It had to be in the book. And his reading of it is so perfect. It's so dry and so funny. I think people are really going to enjoy this one.
Absolutely. I don't want to give anything away, but, you know, the concepts he introduces at the start, I thought it would be an essay on one thing, then it became something else, then it went somewhere else, and I thought, oh, this is just great. This is one where you could read it and it would be very entertaining, but to actually hear it and hear it in the author's voice, it's fantastic.
Oh, it certainly is. And it's ever so slightly different from the version of the essay that's in the book, too.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'd recommend definitely, if people enjoy listening to this reading of this essay, that they go out and get a copy of the book so they can enjoy it all over again in a slightly different form.
Fantastic. Shall we have a listen?
I certainly think we should.
Let us learn who are our allies. Confessions of a Lapsed Fan by Peter Cavanagh. It is an odd experience being a lapsed Doctor Who fan. I was certainly among them throughout the 90s and early noughties. I knew fandom was probably going on somewhere, but I was one of the group that had handed in their TARDIS key for good. It was only later, with access to the internet, that I realised there were quite a few of us lapsed fans back in those wilderness years. We went out into the cold and lost the lingo. To the lapsed, shakedown was something you did to a duvet cover. Virgin adventures were trips made by Richard Branson, usually in a balloon. And as for the dark dimension, well, that was only faced when measuring up for new trousers. To the lapsed fan, the wilderness years are no different in many ways to the lost episodes. They historically occurred, and we can get a glimpse of them, but can't undo the basic fact we just weren't there. But one of the most interesting incidents in the life of the lapsed fan was meeting or bumping into someone whose fandom had not lapsed while yours had. This is my story. From the summer of 1999, I found myself working at Kent's Cavern. It's a tourist attraction in Torquay. It's a prehistoric cave. I've worked with a team of wonderful people, and one of them was decidedly from the constellation of Castorbras. His name was Rob, and he was a not-lapsed Doctor Who fan at the time when I was. Now, Rob was an interesting character, but he would occasionally be the talk of the staff room. "Who's the guy who works in the souvenir shop these days?" someone would say. That wasn't rude, because the seasonal stuff came in and out. And someone said, "Oh, that's Rob." They might have called him Robert. "Nice guy, but he's a Doctor Who fan," she said. A vague disapproval, nay warning, in her intended response. Now my ears pricked up. Of course, Doctor Who's a Doctor Who. Doctor Who, I remember that. And Rob's a fan. It was a slight Derek Jacobi moment. The sound of Roger Delgado's voice, whispering like a phantom through the room, competing only with the poster of the Phantom Menace, stuck with blue tack above the paper towel holder. "Yes, I used to be a Doctor Who fan," I said quietly to myself. But the reception Rob was getting wasn't good. "It might be best if I keep lapsed and keep mum. Say nothing, don't react, don't look suspicious. You've never heard of the Trakan Union. You don't know who Prentice Hancock is. You don't even know how to say Mandragora correctly." But I was intrigued. And a few days later, I go to see Rob. He works in the gift shop on site. I want to have a quick handshake and a bit of a hello. Now, this wasn't the time or place to discuss whether or not Eldrad must live. I try to size him up. Okay, he's a Doctor Who fan. But, for example, is he as knowledgeable as me? I mean, I'm lapsed, but I still remember it all. Was he at Longleat in 1983? Does he have Day of the Daleks at home? On Betamax? I liked being the only Whovian in this village. "He's interviewed one of the doctors," someone says a few days later in the staff room. "He's interviewed one of the doctors, the host of a local convention." Wow, maybe Rob is the real thing. He knows his Dick Mills from his Royce Mills. Interviewed one of the doctors, probably one of the lesser doctors, nevertheless impressive. There's a word on the street that he's met Anthony Ainley. And so this little secret went on. I know that I'm a lapsed Who fan. I know that he isn't one, and he doesn't know me. But I think I'd like to leave a few clues. Now, I'll give you an example of one. A group from the workplace were going to go potholing, and there's a sign-up sheet on the staff room wall. You sign your name. I put the name Davros on the sheet, hoping that Rob will see it. Well, he does. Who's put the name Davros here? I keep quiet. This is building excitement for the summer. I may be lapsed, but I know that you can't have the big reveal too early in episode one. I visit Rob again, working in his gift shop. Now, here's the thing. The management have let him bring in his own music to play in the shop. I go down to see him, and there I can hear incidental music from Kef McCulloch. I try and play it cool. Casually, I mention in conversation, "Oh, Rob, is this Kef McCulloch?" Now, I think I'm giving myself away. Apparently not. Apparently not. I'm trying to show him that there's another Time Lord stranded on Earth, just like him. But no, Rob takes it in his stride. Kef's a household name in Torquay in 1999, apparently. Everyone can recognise this music. Well, I leave. Clue 2 falls to the ground in a heap, like a fired Colin Baker. But the next time, Rob would take the initiative. I want you to picture the scene. We were sat outside. It's about 3:30 in the afternoon. It's a hot, sunny day, and so tourists have forsaken caves to go down to the beach. Wise lot, which means we've got time for long lunches and lots of free time. So Rob is sat there on a wooden bench with me, as is the petite Linda. That's not her real name, but I want to protect her from emails. Linda sold ice creams in the day, but used to flirt with everyone at night when drunk in the evenings. That wasn't about to happen. Now she began her journey into a large bag of crisps. She was ever so little, so she was about to double her body weight. Now, by this time, Rob must have been a little suspicious of me. I was, after all, gloriously optimistic about the Star Wars prequels. Well, it was a different era then. And Rob seemed to now have a plan to out me as a Doctor Who fan. But he's aware that we're in a hostile culture to that kind of thing. We're in a secret club. And so he had no choice but to perform the most remarkable experiment. We were chatting about the day, the weather, the customers, the hassle, the price of fish, whatever, when suddenly he looked at me and said this, "I have a question for you, Peter." "Go ahead, Rob," I say. And he said this, "Peter, if you had created a virus in your laboratory, something contagious and infectious that killed on contact, a virus that would destroy all other forms of life, would you allow its use?" Now, you know and I know that he was quoting the Fourth Doctor's pivotal question to Davros from Genesis of the Daleks. But Linda doesn't know that. She looks up, her crisps no longer fully interesting her. And I thought about Rob's great question. And with every effort to avoid any hint of Michael Wisher's inflections or performance and make it sound like my own response, I just said, "Oh, that's an interesting conjecture." "But would I do it?" asked Rob. "What, you mean the only living thing, a microscopic organism reigning supreme?" I said. Linda's eyes were now fixed on the pair of us. "I agreed that it was a fascinating idea. But," pressed Rob, "would you do it?" And there, over the sandwiches, warm cola and wasps, I began to speculate how it would feel to hold in my hand the capsule that contained such power, to know that life and death on such a scale was my choice. And although Rob was grinning, Linda had stopped eating. The guy she'd been flirting with the night before seemed to be prepared with the tiniest pressure of his thumb, enough to break the glass, to end everything. I'd seemed such a nice guy. Perhaps I shouldn't be let near the public. What was all this about a deadly virus? What had really been going on in the caves? And with my fob watch now fully opened, not to mention years of devouring that old BBC cassette of the Genesis soundtrack, now paying off for Rob and I in a way that the writer, producer, director could never have imagined, I had temporarily broken out. Our late lunch ended, and without much further discussion. Nothing was said between us. We'd just had the encounter. Linda went back to selling ice creams and her thoughts, while Rob returned joyfully to his Kef McCulloch booth, safe in the knowledge that in the spirit of Professor Yana, he was not alone. Now that moment passed, and I very quickly went back to being lapsed again. In fact, by the following week, I brought in all my old precious Doctor Who stuff. Merchandise, books, autographs, tapes, rare stuff. And I gave it to Rob free of charge. He offered to pay, but I didn't want it. To me, it was just a load of old tat. I have a feeling he treasured it, and I'll tell you why. Because I think I just bought it back off him on eBay. There's a price to pay for being lapsed. Is Rob the real persona behind eBay member Nida76? Probably. I should ask him if he's interested in potholing. Apparently, Davros is going. A version, a slightly longer version of this essay can be read in Contact Has Been Made.
You've been listening to You and Who Talking, presented by Rob Irwin with J.R. Southall. The You and Who books, from which all royalties are paid to charity, are available in print and for Kindle from watchingbooks.weebly.com.